$5 Fundraising Auctions presents Black Tie and Tales, brought to you by our partner Sojourn Ventures, featuring your co-hosts Greg Kuroga and Devon Bell. Welcome back to Season 2 of Black Tie and Tales, where we share tales of triumph and tragedy from the wonderful world of fundraising auctions. I'm Greg Kuroga, half of your co-hosting team. As always, I'm joined by co-host Devon Bell.
Hello, all.
Happy New Year, Devo.
Thanks, buddy. Same to you.
Thank you very much. And you, not to like give away your birth date, social security number, mother's maiden name, or any of that, but you recently celebrated a birthday, yeah?
I did. 56 years young. I know that's coming up for you.
Yeah. And you've got the post New Year's, post holidays birthday date.
Right.
My brother was born like a little over a week, like about a week and a half before Christmas. And so, you know, the way we grew up, it wasn't full of wealth and plentitude. So his birthday was always negatively impacted by Christmas.
Yeah. And here's your combined gift.
Presents, right? Combined gifts. So with the birthday and the new year, did you hit the same thing?
Well, I'm a grown up now, so, I worked and no one knew any different. But I sometimes get that afterthought. I have a couple weeks. I actually have a bunch of family who's right around Christmas. They suffer more than me.
Okay.
You know how you get past that week after Christmas and New Year's, and now everyone's going back to work. So even though it's only a couple weeks, there's kind of a natural break in there where it feels like a fresh season.
Once you've gone back to work after Christmas, it really feels like a different, things have started over.
Right? I see what you did.
Nice.
I see what he did.
Things have started over. And especially in our world, our work world, like the new year, like there's a lot of, I want to say, cultural mythology around the new year, and resetting the date somehow magically resets all of these things in life, in the world. And we and resolutions. God, I hate resolutions. But I don't mind the concept, but the implementation on a cultural scale drives me. Anyway, the new year with our work, though, it really does feel like a whole new thing every year because we've got this big break.
Right. Not only do the organizations for whom we work have a big break,
right,
and no one does anything, and they have a couple months, right? Like, none of us touch an auction until at least February.
They don't do any fundraising auctions. They're doing other stuff,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Year campaigns and all this other stuff, which is why nobody wants to do a fundraising auction.
Yeah, right. Now, what does that mean to us? But then for us personally, it falls off a cliff like after Thanksgiving,
right,
maybe one,
yep,
and it doesn't hit again till Valentine's Day. So for you and I, it takes on this surreal quality. Like, did I used to do this?
Right. You know, like the old joke, the cliche about it. It's like riding a bicycle, right? Like once you learn it. But I remember especially early on for like the first decade or so, that break was really unsettling in the sense of coming back February to get that first auction, start having the auction dreams mid-January, right? Do I still know how to run numbers? Do I still know how to, like, you know, the auction dreams where missing bids and, you know, like auction nightmares.
Always
like,
a little behind. Totally. Just quick catch up.
Or the dream where the mouth stops working. I'm passing roofing. Like that horror story. Like other people are afraid, like have the dream where they can't run, right? Like
yeah,
the legs are frozen. Mine, it's my tongue. My tongue is low. You know, it's like, oh my God, no, it's the worst nightmare.
No.
But also starting over in a positive way, because it's a chance to take a break and come back fresh. And I know I hit those events at the end of the year with the same attempted vim and vigor that I bring. But the beginning of the year, it's a little fresher. You're starting off at the very beginning of the year. And so we thought we'd start off with this year, the first theme, and that is starting over, right?
Yeah. And in our world, that can take on a very literal quality. Yep. Like that right now, what we're starting is the consulting for events that happen in the busy season that happened in March and April. So, okay, here we go. The 2025 event runaround, not specifically the runaround, the 2025 event catch up, you know, our first meetings. And often there's been wholesale changes to the people that run the auction, right?
Yeah.
And it really, for them, it's like, starting fresh. For us, it's starting over.
And institutional knowledge is so important. It is so, it is such a challenge to, and it's gotten better now. A lot of the software applications they use either for donor development or for auction planning have institutional knowledge containment and retainment built into them, but it wasn't always this way. And you and I both worked with St. Mary's in Ukiah,
yes,
which is a school in Ukiah, California, near where we grew up. Shout out Willits, home of the Skunk Train. Go Wolverines. And Ukiah, St. Mary's, I worked with them for like 3 or 4 years. And there was a lot of, anytime we start working, see Agents of Change, what was that, episode 2? See Agents of Change about when we're first brought in and we're trying to bring with us a lot of the consulting that helps make us valuable, but also helps make events more successful, right? And so did the Agent of Change thing and like revamped a lot of the auction and helped build things up to new levels. So fast forward 3 or 4 years, and you remember that event is at the Redwood Empire Fairgrounds.
Right.
It's in a big cavernous event space, and their auction on Saturday night was like 30 something auction lots. And because it's a school crowd, really drunk crowd, super loud, and it ends with a band coming on and just blaring, you know, blowing down the house. And so 30 something lots were on like lot 24, new auction chair, new committee, things are going great, things are going smooth, things are selling for as well as they have and for years past. And on lot 24 ish the auction chair comes running up to the stage, and she says to me, I need you to get all of the winning bidders to come to the stage. And I was like, oh, you want to get a picture? You know, what's the deal? She's like, no, wait for it. I need them to tell me how much they paid for their auction lots.
I believe I paid $20 for this lot.
I said, is nobody writing this down? Right? And she said, no. So in the revamp of their committee and their auction chair, they literally started over with the institutional knowledge. Now as a consultant, I blame myself, right? I was like, oh my gosh, how did I not see this coming?
But who's gonna do this?
You assume, like you said, it 1 year. You don't need to say it every year. We need X number of spotters, right? We need one spotter for every 4 tables, and we need 2 people to act as recorders to write down what I say so that we can cash everybody out at the
end. For redundancy purposes, and maybe we record it too for a third level.
Well, and so here's what happened. I said, oh my gosh, that'll never work. Right? Like they're not going to remember, and B, any number they give you is going to be off by at least 30 to 40%.
As the kids say, it'll be sus.
Very sus. No cap. And so I said, just get somebody to write down the last 8 lots, right? And I got you. And so when the auction was over, I immediately went back to the soundboard, stopped record, checked. Thank goodness my MP3 player had the whole auction recorded on it. The band starts, right? So it's super freaking loud. It's Mendocino County in February, which is not warm at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. Mm-mm. Right. So I go out in the cold, poor shivering little auctioneer in the cold out on the hood of some F-150.
Aww.
And like put in my earbuds and transcribe the entire auction for them, because I'm like, I know my rhythm. I know my MP3 recorder. It took me like 20 something minutes to fast forward and record their entire auction. So, you know, A, thank goodness for fail safes, but B, and I guess we can save the lessons learned for at the end of the podcast, but institutional knowledge is so crucial when you're starting over with new staff, committee members, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like I think we probably said in the Agents of Change episode that when you have an organization that doesn't know what the hey, and they are saying what's a fund to need and what's a spotter,
right.
In a way it's great because it's tabula rasa and you set it up the way you want it, right? You get a kind of like crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's as you go. But when they're starting over and you've worked with them before, well, right. Everything I put in is like all for naught now, right? You get a, I was saying to you earlier, he told me it was going to be starting over, and talking about, you know, when the organization is made a bunch of changes and is like doing things in a new way, that does not include picking a new auctioneer.
Right. Yeah. Thankfully.
So here we are.
Yeah.
Right. Because so often the new chair comes in and they're like, I want to change something.
There's this guy I love.
And the thing we're going to change is you. Yes. And you know, and I think I've said this numerous times on this podcast. I don't take it personally when the winds of change blow me into town, and I try not to take it personally when they blow me out.
Agents and victims of change.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, nah, speaking of, no, I was, there's no way I can't make that bridge. There's no way I can make that bridge. Black Tie and Tails.
Speaking of change, you need a change of scenery,
nice.
It's a stretch.
You should roll with
it's a stretch.
Speaking of change, if your auction needs a change of pace in its travel lots,
he's the way. That's why he's the pro.
We took us three tries to get here. Team effort. If only the AI was plugged in. Black Tie and Tails is brought to you by our partners at Sojourn Ventures. When your auction is in need of some international travel, check out Sojourn Ventures. They curate trips to Italy, Bali, Spain, and they recently added Venice to their list of Italy consignment packages. They offer over a dozen curated packages that include round-trip airport transfers, full-body massages,
yes, please,
daily breakfasts, in-home chef dinners, and much, much more. Your buyers are going to enjoy top-level concierge service and 2 full years to redeem their trip, all at reasonable consignment prices. Check out sojournventurestravel.com or look for the link in the bio of this podcast. Now, when we were talking about the theme, starting over, you had talked about when a client wants to do, like, isn't changing you, but the rest of the list is up for grabs.
Right. Like, they're not changing me, but I don't recognize anything around me. Right. Mm. Completely new. You know, this is, I believe this was for a school, and that's kind of the idea of starting over is an ongoing theme with schools. Mm. Right. A lot of the organizations we do, this person's been on the board for 20 years. They know all the other tall poppies in their crowd who have been supporting this organization forever. And in that circumstance, our challenge can often be inertia.
Yeah.
Here's how we do things. Yep. This is how we've done things forever. Everyone's freaked out about change, right? We do an auction every time, even though it doesn't succeed. We never do an auction, even though we probably could.
We always have the fun to need after dessert.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So but a school, you've got this natural turnover.
Yes, that's right. And it can be pretty short. Like, it gets extended if you have multiple children.
Or K through same, 8, right? You know, like, or a couple extra years, yeah, in middle school.
Right, but I've done schools that are kindergarten, first and second grade. I mean, you go from new to the gala, don't know anybody, to 1 foot out the door, don't care anymore in just a couple years.
Yeah.
So wow. In that, when it's something like that, our challenge is not inertia, it's continuity, right? Because it's all fresh people and they didn't go. All of a sudden, but besides the teachers, like, even the head of school has changed. I'm the one who's been around, right? We're the old veterans, and everyone else here is new faces, except the teacher who's been there, you know, 20 years. So this school, they had got new people, new auction committee. Okay, we're coming in with new stuff. And they told me, we've got this great new venue. And they show me, and it is good, and good for them, you know? And then they go, oh, and we're going to do the runaround, which is a specific, often challenging game that you can do during the auction, and we're going to do that. And then we're going to do this other thing, and we're going to do this other thing. And I had to stop them, and I told them a story that I got from you, an analogy, which is, if you've got this huge vessel and you're bringing it into port and it's not lined up right, the way they do is 2 miles before they get to shore, they correct their course a tiny, tiny bit. And I told them, you know, try to think of your event as that big vessel. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of monster inertia of how it is. And if you change the venue and you introduce a theme and you do a runaround, like, these are all things that require, like, people getting good with it, training them or getting people comfortable with it. And if you stack too many up of those on at once, it just can be disconcerting. So I, you know, told them, like, of course, a lot of these ideas are great ideas, but maybe let's go through them with the ethos of how much it change, how much, right? We are starting over here, but how much can we carry with us right. from what we had before? And yeah, so they took my advice to some extent. I think we probably made more changes than I would have, but hey, it's your event.
I always say three.
Okay.
I always say your crowd can handle three major changes in a year, right? You're going to change your venue. That's a major change. Okay. Going to change, well, you change your caterer, change your theme, you know, any of the, like the theme, maybe not so much, but crowds can handle three major changes in any given year.
Different color vest. Whoa, slow down.
Yeah, easy.
Slow
there,
down.
Cowboy. Easy, easy. What is this? Michaels?
We might have to auction this off. Oh, call back to an earlier episode.
Oh, no, don't do that. Yes, Florida man. So I did an event back in 2007, and I feel comfortable naming names on this one because it's been a long time. It's been a long time. Shouldn't have left you. It's been a long time. And, also, the outcome was positive.
Sure.
But it was for American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco.
Okay.
Big theater, like the big theater organization in San Francisco. Of all of the local theater organizations, I would say ACT's the biggest. And 2007 was their Ruby Jubilee. And for the 20 years prior to that, speaking of inertia, they had done a 15 to 20 lot auction with a fund a need. And I hadn't been involved with it. I was relatively new to fundraising. 07 would have been my fourth year of doing fundraising events. Fourth year. And counts fingers.
And toes.
Yeah, right. that lawnmower accident. So they come to me, and Patty Roof was the event chair. And Patty is, if you don't know Patty, Patty is a force of nature. Patty is not to be denied when Patty has determined the course, right? Like, and Patty comes to me and she says, I don't want to do an auction. I want to start over, make this fresh, and do a fund the need only. And my first reaction is, oh God, no,
right?
Like, that sounds horrible to me. And it was the first event that ever came to me and said, I want to do fund the need only. And
as the auctioneer, can I argue against that?
Well, and I was, you know, and I've come in hindsight, looking back, I realized, like, A, there's the normal arguments against doing a fund the need only. Auction helps build momentum. It establishes my credibility. It devalues money. It caters to the people who want to purchase things in an auction. And we know from data tracking, shout out to Beth Sandifer, we know from data tracking that the people who bid on auction items are not the same people who give you money in the fund the need. There is a small subset of people who only want to bid on auction items. All of that aside, right, what I realized also is that it was just terrifying, right? Part of the process of having the auction to get out there and get warmed up, to build that rapport with the crowd, to be like, okay, well, this is working, and now we're going to do this fund the need. Like, now we're going to do the fund the need. Like, that process was reassuring to me. So the concept of doing a fund the need only was scary, right?
Yeah, I make a point when I'm doing a fund the need only to request that you give me things to do in the program before we get to the fund and need.
Yep.
Because what the auction often serves is we hoot and holler and we get rapport between me and the audience. Yep. Now we're having fun. Now we're homies. If I haven't appeared on stage until the fund and need, it goes,
the first words out of your mouth are,
give me some money. Right. Yeah. Who the hell is this guy asking for the money? What does he have to do with anything?
Especially at ACT's 40th anniversary gala, ACT, when they did their gala, what they would do is they would honor somebody in the community, the acting community, directing, whatever, right? They would honor somebody who had ties to ACT. And so in 2007, you may remember a show on NBC called Heroes.
Okay, I do.
Remember Heroes? And two of the stars from Heroes had come through ACT and had direct ties to their Young Conservatory or direct ties to being on the ACT stage when they were first coming up as actors, right?
Local peeps make good.
Exactly. And you know, Heroes, for you youngins out there, Heroes was a phenomenon on NBC in 2007, topping the chart. And so they get these three actors from Heroes to come. They're like, okay, well, we're going to have Adrian Pastar, Milo Ventimiglia, who went on to do, I mean, Adrian's done great stuff. Milo's gone on to do tons of other great stuff. This Is Us, right?
Yep.
Milo was in that whole run. And Masi Oka. We're going to have those three on stage. They're going to make the pitch for the fund they need, and then you're going to ask for the money. And I said, okay, that's great. However, if I come on after they've spoken and it's the first time people see me, everybody's going to be like, who is this guy? Right?
Yeah.
Like, we need to set me up for success from the beginning. So Patty gets on stage at the very beginning of the night and she says to the crowd, my gift to you is that there's going to be no auction tonight.
Oh,
and the crowd goes wild, right? They're crazy. She's like, but when Greg comes out here later and he gets up here on stage, if you don't give him money tonight, there's going to be a 30 lot auction next year, right? So I'm like, thank you.
Thank you, question mark.
Thank you. Ultimately, like, if my job, if you only look in the short term of my job was to raise money that night, then thank you.
Okay.
Right? Lob the pitch for that.
Sure.
Right? The pitch for that. So we go through some program, yada, yada. We get to the point where we're about to start the paddle race. And that's when I come out and say, okay, everybody, you know, do the thing that's now standard in this. It's like, introduce the concept of the fund they need, get everybody to find their paddles and get ready, and then introduce Adrian, Milo, and Masi, and then stay on stage with them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So they
Human.
Go through their thing, right? And I am trying to build credibility through proximity.
Right? I'm with yeah, these guys.
These guys. Yeah. Right? Yeah, totally. Hey, look. It worked. As a result, it worked. I mean, it was and we've talked about anniversary events have a lot of implication and carry with them a lot more weight and tend to make more. The year after an anniversary event is always a hard downbeat
right.
to navigate.
It's a sacrificial lamb year.
Yeah. But that year, they started their auction fresh. They went back to doing Fund the Need Only. And I'm not going to say that they started the trend of doing Fund the Need Only, but they were the first one I ever did.
And I think that touches on another aspect of starting over, which is, you know, we've said over and over, it could be challenging and wait, hold up. You don't want to chart, you know, you want to maintain some continuity. But that's a perfect example of it being an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. It's an opportunity to it's easy to do the same old thing over and over again, and it just gets stale. Like we've said that with an individual auction lot, you know, this people give their condo in Hawaii and guess what? Everyone who wanted to do it has already done it. In fact, last year's winner didn't even do it. They just donated it back. So when you do have a starting over, it's a chance to look at what, you know, maybe you can bring to them. Here's what really worked and I wouldn't mess with. And here's what maybe needs a break or a tweak or a just dump it, you know? And
I had in the notes then I didn't get right. to, but sometimes starting over means giving a long time auction lot a rest.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And if you're looking at, yeah, I mean, and I tend to flow pretty intuitively, and by that I mean like I'm very passionate and I tend to just like talk a lot and my mouth goes places.
You?
Yeah. And then which is why I've tried to learn to take a step back, take a breath, and rely on data where possible, right? I try to be data driven. I'm not always, but I try to be data driven. And I think I always tell clients like, hey, look, here's my idea, but you know, I think this lot's tired, but let's not listen to me. Let's look over the last however many years you've had it.
Right.
And then make the decision as to whether or not it's doing well or not. And if it's not, it's okay to give an auction lot a break. It's okay to tell a donor, hey, look, we've appreciated you all these years. We really especially you doubled it the last three, right? Like yep. now, we want to give you a break. And if they insist and say, and really we want to let it rebuild some momentum to be desirable again. There's a donor for an event I'm doing has donated the same trip to London as long as I've been doing the event. Right? That's where I met Ed. Right?
Wow.
Right? That's where I met Ed. And going all the way back to that, this person has donated this trip to London. And, you know, it gets to be a certain point where, like, I'm just copy paste. It's the same trip.
Same joke.
Year, same place. Yeah, London, exactly. Yeah. And at a certain point, like, the crowd's seen it and done it, and we're trying really hard to sell something that is generously and well-intentioned, generously donated and well-intentioned in its donation. But hey, you know, sometimes starting over, that's why new families getting, if you're at a school, let me back up two levels and say, like, of the takeaways, I think the biggest takeaway is to have a way of capturing and passing on institutional knowledge.
Yeah. And I would say that behooves you. That is valuable, even if there's not a starting over moment.
Right.
Like he was just saying, when, you know, let's go back and look how it did. We have no way of knowing how it's going to do. And maybe the people were right in the room last year and they weren't this year, or maybe they weren't last year and now they are. I always tell the story of the parking space at the school that sold for $20,000. Isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. The next year it sold for $2,000. So you just never know.
And that was exciting too, but just not the same.
Expectation means a lot in this game, right? So careful when you tell somebody, this is the best movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, you're setting it up. Anyway.
I told you about Glacier National Park.
Yeah, there you go. It's the best ever.
The best ever.
He told his family that before they went. And then I said, so a couple days before, did you start, like, backpedaling? And, like, it's okay. Yeah. It might be crowded.
For a decade, I'm telling my family, oh my God, Glacier National Park is amazing. You won't believe, like, nature and the glaciers, and they carve this out. And then, like, the week before. But it's probably changed.
Yeah.
It was probably younger and smaller. Right. And so it seemed bigger. And now when it comes to glaciers and ice like that, it doesn't matter how tall a human you are, they're still pretty big.
Yeah, and glacier is all that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
right, I'm sure they were blown away. But, what I was going to say is, it's just like with budgeting, you know, like when we're saying, oh, how will this lot do? And if we never had it in before, then we don't know.
Right.
You can never know going forward, but you could, if you keep good records, you could know with certainty how it did do.
Yeah.
Right. And sure, past performance is not a guarantee of future results, but it's a great starting point. And you can see trends, and you can work off what you already know works and what maybe needs to work better.
Yep. So keep good records.
Yeah.
Right? And keep records and keep, if you can, have sheets delineating roles for the auction, right?
Yeah.
I worked with the Napa Valley Vintners and Growers Alliance, Napa Valley Growers, the NVG. First time I met with them, I felt like I was meeting with the auction mafia. Right. Because, I mean, we met downstairs at Trinchero in this, like, dimly lit room with candles embedded in the walls.
Nice.
We sat at this big, huge, dark wood table. Right. It felt that, well, and it didn't hurt that Goodfellas is playing over screens in the bathrooms. But they handed out, they had roles, they had descriptions for every role, and they had amazing, they had a really strong committee. And one of the roles that I still remember, I kept the copy of this and still use it to this day, was they had a fund-a-need chair. They had an auction chair and a fund-a-need chair.
I love that, because that embodies it will be important if we act like it's important.
Yeah. And
right?
They put, and they had a job description for the fund-a-need chair. And
That's
this is
great.
What this person does. And it was extremely valuable. But again, this was all in a notebook that got opened and handed out to everybody at the first auction committee meeting of every year. Like, okay, we need to fill these roles, right? Who wants to do this? Who wants to do that?
Sure.
And all the way down to, you get to the auction night and lo and behold, we need at least two recorders.
Right? Yeah, like, someone should be writing this down.
Somebody should be writing this
Did
down.
Did I not say that out loud?
Yeah.
I should have.
Yeah,
and I've had the situation, maybe you have as well, where they get a new director of development and it's an all new auction group, and they go to me, what did we sell past years? And I can go, here you go.
Right.
Right. Here's the list from last year or from 2 years ago. So, we can be part of the institutional knowledge.
Yeah. My lot order my lot order spreadsheet includes tabs for every year I've done the event going back.
Yeah.
Right. So I have all of going back. I think I started doing this in 2014. I'm like, hey, I should keep this all in one place instead of having like, you know, like just a new spreadsheet every year. And so I can scroll back. It also helps when trying to do a lot order. That kind of institutional knowledge helps me. Like, oh, I have a tendency to put this lot first every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the donor gets mad about it. So maybe I should change that this year.
Well, and like you said, for the London, it sure is pleasant to basically cut and paste and then clean it up a little, the description from last year. Like, that was easy.
Yeah, that was nice. But I think that trip to London made the top 10 most exciting lots at one point, or like made my list at one point, because it was like, it did super well a decade ago, you know? Institutional knowledge, limit your changes to three big things, right? If you're going to start over. And if you're going to start over, I'd say we didn't discuss it, but it didn't come out in the context of any of the stories, but get buy-in, right?
Yes.
Don't just change for the sake of change and then hope everybody's going to come along with you because you made this change happen, right? People say, what do you think about this as a concept? Bless you. What do you think about this as a concept for our fund to need? And I'm like, I think it sounds good, but why don't you go ask some of the donors first, right? Because I'm not going to give you $25,000 the night of your event. But if you know somebody who is, ask them. Start with them. Start with the people who are actually going to support you. So if you're going to make changes, get buy-in on the changes before the night of, so that people aren't going, oh, wait, what is this? When they arrive, they're like, oh, yeah, check this out.
Right. It's a little harder to get buy-in from the crowd, but you can tease that as features, not bugs, what we're going to change. And it's absolutely crucial to get buy-in from the board, from the auction committee, from the development director, from the head of school, from the people that, right, from the executive director of this organization, the people that are movers and shakers that actually are probably inviting the people who are going to give.
Right.
Let's get buy-in from them so everyone's excited and they already had a chance to voice their concerns and we can address them.
Table captains. Have table captains.
Sure.
And then you only have to have one person per table on board with the change.
Yeah. And
then empower them to go make the, get their table fired up.
Right. And when you have someone who's new, right, it's a person with a freshman at the school, or it's a person who just joined the organization, then
could all the kindergarten parents please raise their hands?
Right. That's a real opportunity because that this isn't a new way for them. This is the way.
Right.
So we'll get them in. We'll make golden gooses that'll go for the duration, and they'll be completely on board with the new way because they don't know anything different.
Yeah. Thank you, listener, for joining us for this episode of Black Tie and Tales and for joining us for a second season of this journey. We appreciate you and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. If there's anything that you want to say or comment on, please find the place to do so in the comment section of the video, or please feel free to find our website, blacktieandtales.com, and send us feedback through that. You can always find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, and all your favorite podcast distribution channels. And like I said, you can find it at blacktieandtales.com. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time for episode 2, Location, Location,
Location. Cue the music. And I thought about it.